Welcome. It's the Long Coat Mafia, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast. It's I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. And this week, we bring you the first of many panels slash presentations we got from ECBRO's second annual Bigfoot convention slash conference, depending on how you want to classify it. And the panel we're bringing you is Zach from the Southern Illinois Monster Hunters. He is the founder and team leader of this organization. And he talks about a lot what he's got, what he brings to the table, what he's done, what he's doing, and so forth and so on. I do advise you to check it out, but I do want to give you all the standard disclaimers that I give with every panel recording that we provide for you. And the first off is that we like to bring you these panels and the fact that we are bringing the convention to you. So therefore, this is Zach's content, not ours. And we are, again, grateful for Zach for letting us record this content and present it to all of you out there willing to listen to this content. Secondly, this is our first time working in a new type of setup. But before I say that, I want to say that out of everything, let me just say this. This part of the disclaimer is kind of confusing because, one, we were able to record directly into the sound system at this location where this convention, this conference was being held. And therefore, we weren't able to adjust the sound. Obviously, this convention, it's not really a convention center, it's a very large event center, and we were able to hook up into their system. We weren't, as a show, Long Coat Mafia Podcast, we're not allowed to touch their sound system. Only the staff was allowed to do that. So you're going to hear maybe a little bit of a sound clips and like clipping in it. That's because everything wasn't really adjusted for everything. So we bared the brunt for that. Now, because of us connecting to their sound system, posed a different type of problem as well as a benefit. The benefit is we got better sound quality, even though in this episode it kind of sounds like we stuck a microphone right up to a speaker and adjusted things from there. That's not the case. I do apologize for that. Again, this was the first time we were able to record like this and using piggybacking off someone else's system. And because of that, we were not able to record audience questions. We did adjust in other panels. We tried to adjust for this. It did not work. So that was pretty much the only thing that was cut out in regards to this episode. And we'll state this fact again in other panel recordings that we can't boost. Because for whatever reason, we could not pick this up or pick up the audience questions. Again, because everybody was learning the sound system, it's kind of hard to say, you know, exactly where the clipping was and everything else, but adjustments were made throughout the course of the day. We'll keep you informed as we drop panels in regards to each panel where issues and what was cut out and what was dropped, what was everything else. So be that as it may, that's pretty much the only thing that was cut out was the sound questions, and there were a few instances where kind of everything just shut down. It wasn't from us, it wasn't the person, Zach. It just seemed like the system turned off and everything was fixed. So whatever time was that it took to set things back up or reset things, we clipped that out, that silence and that dead air out. Other than that, this is unedited. For the most part, it is, again, Zach's content, not ours. This is his presentation. And again, Zach, if you're listening to this, thank you again for letting us record this. Enough of me ranting and raving and giving my my standard disclaimers. Here is Zach's panel, and let's take it away, Zach.
So there's this guy going down the road, and this Texas truck driver, and he picked up this guy from Illinois. And he said, "Where are you going, buddy?" He goes, "I'm going down the road." And he goes, "Well, hop in the truck with me." So they're going down the road. Texas truck driver looks out the window, and he sees this field full of animals. He goes, "What's that?" Illinois man said, "That's some of the best milk cows in the country." He said, "Well, we got bigger longhorns in Texas." They go down the road a little bit more. He looks out in this field. He says, "What's that?" The Illinois man says, "That's some of the fastest quarter horses you'll ever find in the United States." He says, "Well, we got bigger Clydesdales down in Texas." About this time, the man from Illinois is getting really, really upset. And they come up on this snapping turtle sitting in the middle of the road. The man from Texas goes, "What's that?" The Illinois man said, "That's a tick." Well, everybody, welcome to the ECBRO second annual Virginia Bigfoot Con. I am Zach D. Sterick, and last year I was the MC, and I guess this year I got promoted to speaker. So, especially everybody, before I get started off, give Daniel Benoit a big round of applause. He put this all together for all the great speakers that's come from all over this great country. Give you a little bit of a background on myself. I am a born and bred Southern Illinois native. I grew up on a cattle farm out in rural Williamson County, Illinois. And I started the Southern Illinois Monster Hunters back in 2015 with my mother, my brother, my cousin, and my best friend that we all went together. And it started there. Like I said, I am co-founder and team leader.
Can you hear me now? Okay, so I started the Southern Illinois Monster Hunters back in 2015. Like I said, I am a co-founder and I am the team leader. I've been researching cryptid creatures and paranormal phenomena for the past 14 years. It all started whenever I had my first encounter with what I believe to be a Sasquatch back whenever I was 9-10 years old in Randolph County, Illinois, up by St. Louis. And I started getting out in the field a little bit more because Mom finally felt comfortable enough to turn me loose on my own in the woods. And up to that point, I was building my knowledge, reading everything I could get my hands on, every kind of report, every kind of monster report from around the world. And I built up quite a library of literature. And like I said, I first encountered when I was 9 years old. I heard the scream of the Sasquatch for the first time, and I'm 24 years old now, and it still resonates with me to this day. Born and raised in a little community called Attila, you will not find it on any map. Well, let's just make that clear. Let's just say it's between here, it's right off Route 13 in between Harrisburg and Marion, Illinois. If you don't know where that is, go see my map at my table. You'll probably find it. Like I said, founded the SIMH with my mother, my brother, my cousin, and my best friend. Gunner, my best friend, then there's me, and then there's my cousin, John. Gunner is our head researcher. I'm the team leader. John is our tracker and whenever needed, a possible trap builder. Like I said, the goal of the Southern Illinois Monster Hunters, if we're going to attempt to go and prove, you know, if these creatures exist, I believe, you know, if there's any kind of possibility we would go and trap it. He is a master at his craft, and that's the reason I enlisted him. And then there's my mother and my brother. My brother couldn't make it today. He's still back home taking care of everything, but my mother is sitting back there at the SIMH table. Go back there and say hi if you get the chance. What is Bigfoot? The name goes and it varies from location, culture, and language. Other names of Bigfoot, Yowie, Skookum, Oma, Yeti, Yeren, Bushman, Hairy Man, Wendigo, Stonish Giant, Wild Man, Shadow Man, Monkey Man, Ukamar, Amistee, and Nandy Barung. Descriptions of Bigfoot vary from location and culture, size, hair color, habits, and appearance vary around the world. How many of us, by show of hands, know who that is? Okay. So that, you know who that is, you know the story behind that. That is the cornerstone that started it for a lot of us. The Patterson Gimlin footage shot October 20th, 1967 in Bluff Creek, California by Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin. It's as you can see, they've cleared it up a little bit more. If you can't see it, some people have a hard time seeing it. Right there is the cheek, the nose, the eye, the lips. The mammary glands right here, you can see what looks to be a hamstring underneath the skin. I actually was doing a little bit of research on the Patterson Gimlin footage. There's a guy that did a ratio comparison between arm and leg length. And the difference between us and Patty, a human's arm to ratio length difference is, I think, 40%. Whenever he measured Patty's arms to her leg ratio, it was 20% difference. Which goes to show you how just unique these creatures are. Earliest report of Bigfoot in Illinois come from Effingham, Illinois in 1912. A woman named Beulah Schroat reported that her and her brothers often spotted huge hairy creatures near their home in Effingham. This may have been the first sighting in Illinois, but it was not the first one in the Great Lakes region. As far back as 1839, witnesses in Michigan City, Indiana, were reporting a quote-unquote wild child near Fish Lake. Today, we would call such a creature Bigfoot. Now, this is one of the first reports that's made. Some people, they'll find it two different places. I found it, this one first. The other one comes from Centerville, Illinois, up by St. Louis, and it happened, I believe, in 1889. And it was reported that a quote-unquote wild man was roaming around the outskirts of Centerville. Some of the most famous Bigfoot of Southern Illinois, the Big Muddy Monster of Murfreesboro, Illinois, just right down the road from me. Big Muddy Monster reared its head out of the Big Muddy River back in 1972, I believe. It was first reported by a couple that was out at the Lover's Lane in Riverside Park along the banks of the Big Muddy River. And it sparked from there. The couple, who was well-respected members of the community, actually went to the police station with this report, and they sent the deputies down there. One of the deputies actually had an encounter with the Muddy Monster, and it scared him so bad that he dropped his handgun, and he refused to go back and get it. He got in the car, and he locked the door, and he left. He just didn't want to be there. The Red Man of Vanna, Illinois, about 20, 30 miles south of me, first reported, I read about it on the Beyond Fire website. It was a red-headed Bigfoot. A man on the outskirts of Anna Jonesboro area said that he saw what appeared to be a red-headed Bigfoot skulking around his dog kennels. The Telebob's Monster of Harrisburg, Illinois, just 15 miles from my house, one of my old stomping grounds. Telebob's Monster was first reported in 1960, and all the way up to 1999, over 50 reports were turned in to the Harrisburg Police Department of this creature. Different appearances of this creature have been reported. The appearance of the creature differs. Some people have said that it was built like an anteater, but instead of having the long snout, it had a mouth that opened up like an alligator mouth. Some people said it was a Bigfoot-like creature, and another local researcher from Carbondale, Illinois, Mr. Bruce Klein with the Little Egypt Ghost Society, had an encounter that he turned into me that happened back in 69, I believe, whenever his family babysitter took him and his brother for a drive through Tuttle Bottoms, which is just north of a little borough of Harrisburg called Thor's Heights. And it was a pterodactyl-like creature that chased their car for a little over 5 miles through the bottoms until they got back on the Raleigh blacktop that goes between Harrisburg and Raleigh, Illinois. And then the Hemp Mine Monster of Hardin County, Illinois, Monroe Township. It's a little area between Cabin Rock, Illinois, and Elizabethtown, Illinois. Hemp Mine was a strip mine. They mined coal and they mined rock out of that mine. It was first reported back in the 60s. The townsfolk around Monroe Township was going and seeing a hairy upright creature being reported. Most notable report that came from this was the deputy sheriff. He was out doing a patrol of the mine area because there were some people getting in there stealing equipment and tools, and he saw the creature walking down the mine road. He pursued the creature to the mine pit itself, and the creature leapt down into the pit, and sightings ceased after that. The sightings ceased after that. The man turned his report into the newspaper, and Bruce Klein got his hands on it, and that's how I got the know of the Hemp Mine Monster. How Bigfoot got to America. This is a theory. The earliest reports of Bigfoot in history come from Tibet and China. As wildlife migrated from Eurasia to North America, Bigfoot, like ancient men, followed the food. So coming from the Russia, Siberia, China, Europe, during the Great Migration, during the last ice age, while the ice caps was then the sea levels were fairly low, you had the Bering Sea land bridge. So, like ancient man, the Neanderthals, whatever they was going and they was following, like the woolly mammoths and all the other wildlife for the food, I believe Bigfoot followed with them. Just because, you know, it's adapt or perish with evolution and just basically life, period. And then as the sea level rose and the land bridge sank, Bigfoot as a species was forced to set up home in North America. And there's been reports of Bigfoot from the northern tip of Alaska, throughout Canada, all across North America, Mexico, all the way down to Chile, South America. A theory on how Bigfoot showed up in Illinois, the Ohio River watershed. This theory among the Bigfoot community is that Bigfoot is rulers for travel routes. If anybody knows the Ohio River, starts here in Pennsylvania, runs and borders West Virginia, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, all the way to where it meets the Mississippi River at Alexander County, Illinois. But right off the river is all these other little creeks and smaller rivers that feed into the main river. What goes along the river? Crops. Usually where the water's going to be, that's where the wildlife is going to be. Deer, coons, bear, mountain lions, the whole kit caboodle. They're going to be where the water is, especially in the summer months. And you ain't going to find wildlife too far from the water source. So I believe that, you know, they would go and they'd use this. And only that, it's not very densely populated unless you get around like where these oil refineries, where these train yards are, like the big refinery on the Kentucky-West Virginia line. I believe they wouldn't really have a chance of being seen by humans. And all of that is past least resistance. Like whenever you go deer hunting, what are you going to do? You're going to be hunting the game trail because that's past least resistance. That's basically the critter highway. So, and only that, I believe they were going to travel the rivers and the creeks as well, because you got fish and you got water, you got abundance of berries, especially during the crop season. You're going to have soybeans, you're going to have corn, barley, what have you. Where did Illinois place in 2018, according to the BFRO? I contacted Amy Boo from Ohio, and she told me, according to the BFRO, member Amy Boo, in 2018, Illinois came in number 4 of all the states in the United States of America. The year before that, 2017, it placed number 2, only 2 confirmed reports behind Washington State's 12. Some of the evidence that I found in southern Illinois, I found this on a farm that I frequent. The theory behind the teepee structures is that, with me, it's a territory marker. The bigger the structure, the bigger the alpha that made it, you know. Well, it's basically he's flexing his muscle. I measured this teepee structure to be 12 foot at the peak. It was right on the edge of a tree line in a meadow where this farmer keeps his cattle at. And you see where the trail where it's really worn down, where the cattle have gone to walk through. And this is also in the same area that I deer hunt on this farmer's property. Some further evidence that I found in southern Illinois, I found this weathered foot track in the Williamson County bottoms. I measured it, and it was 18 inches long, 10 inches across the top of the foot, 8 inches across the heel. I found this on a sandbar in a creek. And, you know, especially out here in Virginia, especially in these hotter months, you really, it's going to be very, very hard to find any kind of a foot track in dry soil. The best time you're going to find it in any kind of soil away from a creek bank is going to be right after a heavy rain, because the soil is going to be a lot more soft. This, like I said, was found in this sandbar where a lot of sandstone and shale had eroded away from the bank and it washed up against the bank. Some further evidence that I found in Southern Illinois, we did an experiment back in 2016. It was the gifting lure experiment. I took a mesh fishing basket, like the kind you go take fishing with you, it's kind of like the I'll carry with you live well. And we went to the local Kroger and Walmart, and we got Golden Delicious apples, and we scattered them around for about 50 to 100 yards around the perimeter of this lure. What we was hoping to do, because this thing was metal, it had all kinds of rivets holding it together, little bits of metal hanging out, we was hoping if a Bigfoot was to reach inside the basket, that we could possibly have a hair sample take and have it possibly analyzed and probably put this mystery to bed. I left it out there for about 2 weeks, and I would go back and I would check it every so often, and it stayed there. All the apples around it were gone, but the five apples that I left inside the basket was untouched. I went back to go pull it after about 2-3 weeks, and I found the tree that it was sitting in bowed over like this and pinned underneath the log. Now that tree, whenever I found it bent over, the tree itself was as big around as a softball. And if anybody held a softball in your hand, you know those things are pretty big around. I tried to go and duplicate this bend on another tree close by. I couldn't even do it. And I'm a farmer, I'm a hoss, I'm fairly strong, I'm able to pull my own weight, I weighed 250 pounds at a time, and I was hanging from that tree trying to get that thing to bow over with my full weight on it, 250 pounds hanging from it, who would hardly even bend. So it goes to show you in the, one example, there'll be other examples, but one example of the upper body strength that these creatures have, just strength all around that they're able to go and do something to this magnitude and to this likeness. Other evidence I found in Southern Illinois, the tree in a tree. I found this back in January of last year. It was my first outing of the year. I went, and it's on an adjacent farm that they lease out to hunt. It was January after deer season. I was just walking through the woods just for the heck of it. And I found this tree that had been uprooted, the roots broke off, and it was sitting up in the fork of a tree like this. And the tree itself that was sitting in, I want to say it was about big around as a softball too, but this tree here, I measured up to 20 foot long, sitting there in that fork of that tree, and the root ball stuck straight up in the air. I tried to budge it. I had a buddy of mine come and try and budge it that was a wrestler, and he could bench press 300 pounds. He couldn't even budge it, and he's really strong. We tried to move it together. Only way we could actually budge it is when we got to come along in a block and tackle and started really jacking that thing up out of the tree. So that's another example of the power of these creatures. I recently have returned to this same area, and the termites have really got into this tree. They've ate through it, and the top half of the stump at the trunk has broke off, and it's laying on the ground. I had a professor out there back in May, and he estimated whenever this thing was still solid, it weighed in excess of 300 pounds at least.
No, I did not.
Mm-mm. It was really dry then and everything, and we had a drought that year, so if anything was coming in there, it wasn't really leaving any kind of footprints. Sorry, I'm a little bit slurred. Further evidence that I found in Southern Illinois, this was about 500 yards on down the trail from the tree in the tree. This tree I found was bent over. This tree was about bigger than a Maxwell coffee can at the base. and it was bent over and pinned underneath a deadfall. The deadfall itself, as you see right here, had been there for about 8 to 10 years. They brought lumberjacks in there to go and do a control area, clearing of the area to go and cut back on some of the trees, and they took it to the lumber mill. But some of the stuff that they cut down, they just left. Some of those trees that they cut down, they just went and they put in there to bring the skidders in, and the yarder to go and drag the trees they cut down out. And so, and you can see where this tree has gone and bent over. That tree has been there for a while because the bark where it was cut is black. Not the board on the inside is black itself. I took two pictures to show you exactly just how big this thing is. I measured this one to be about 15 feet up a little bit right here at the peak. And I checked all around to see, you know, if there was any kind of like human involvement, if there was any kind of like choker marks, any kind of scarring from a come along steel cable could have done, any kind of block and tackle, any kind of wheel tracks that could have been in there from people bringing in like tractors, bulldozers. There was no disturbance at all. It was just the four-wheeler tracks that was there, but that had really been washed out, and they hadn't been there for about 3 weeks. I asked the landowner if he knew about this. He did not know about this, and I said, well, how long ago was it you guys were in here? He said, about 3 weeks ago. The theory behind tree bends and or what we call them arches. I'm sorry about the text. My PowerPoint got a little messed up. The theory goes many different ways. Some believe it to be a trail marker or a directional point for food or a water source. I believe it to be both. Some of them I've actually found not far along was a trail that was really heavily traveled, about 4 feet wide, really worn out dirt path through the woods. And some of them I've actually found that the way that they have bent over, they usually point towards a water source. This one right here, the way it was bent over, just right over the next hill was a really big creek that was a really water source for the deer and the raccoons and the possums and the turkeys and all the rest of the wildlife that inhabited the area. You take it as you will. This is just what I'm presenting to you guys. There's so many things out there, but you got to really keep an open mind on what they could be. Some of them I found to be pointing towards where a house was, and the farmer had grain bins out back that he kept unlocked. And he would go out and he would find, you know, corn strung on the ground with the door hanging wide open on his bin. Further evidence that I found in Ferncliff State Park in Gorville, Illinois, Johnson County, this county just south of me. This trackway was found on the crest of Round Bluff at trail marker 5. Three tracks found along a dirt path, all measured 13 inches long, 7.5 across the top of the foot, 6 inches across the heel. Tracks at 4 feet apart from each other, showing a long stride. With the size of these tracks, I estimate this to be a longer one compared to the one track that I showed you earlier that was 18 inches long. This one was 13 inches long. I estimate to be a rather young subject. Young subject. Really had a pretty hard stride, and as far as running, I was running at a full sprint, and I could barely even make the same step stride as this thing. I measured the tracks from the heel of the back foot to the heel of the foot in front of it, and I didn't have any kind of dusting powder or any kind of plaster of Paris. I could have made a track if I wanted to because it was just really in the loose dirt, but you can still see definitive tracks. I kept trying to take pictures before I dusted them, and it really wasn't turning out, so I took a Daniel Benoit trick, and I took and I used Angel Soft baby powder to go and dust it to go and bring out the details. Of course, if I talked to Michael Cook, that's a big no-no. So you live and learn, especially this is learning experience. This is possibly a photo taken by me in late 2017. I took it off of an ATV trail on my farm in rural Williamson County, Illinois. The subject appears to be 75 feet away from where I took the photograph. I didn't realize it was in the photo until I looked at it a couple of days later. And this structure that's right here was not built by Bigfoot. I built it. I use that as a turkey blind. This was right after fall turkey season. I'd gone up there and I'd built a little blind, and I took camel burlap and I stretched them across the two trees in front, and I took the sticks just to break up my silhouette. So that was not Bigfoot, that was me. And I go whenever I'm out there, you know, how many of us when we're out, we take pictures just because it's pretty out? With the scenery. Well, I was just taking pictures because it looked pretty out and I wanted to go and show my granddad and my mother and my grandmother and my brother. And then another guy who was in the Bigfoot group that I'm in pointed it out, and he messaged me and he says, "You've caught something." "Seriously? You've caught something. Where?" And he pointed it out to me, and this is the original, and then this is the one that had been zoomed in. You can clearly see something right there that's peeking around the tree, watching me. Where it looks like the head, the shoulder, the hand, the possible leg. This past November, I was honored to be part of the Small Town Illinois documentary by Southern Illinois University of Carbondale. I'll give you a little bit of a backstory on this. Right here is my good friend Adam Holbrook. I met him at a local lecture that Bruce Klein from the Royal Egypt Ghost Society was giving at the same library that I give a lot of my lectures at. And he saw my shirt, my Southern Illinois Monster Hunter shirt, and I said, "If you're going to do a crab lecture, you got to include the Southern Illinois Monster Hunter." He goes, "Well, what do you have in mind?" I said, "Well, I'd like to take you out on a night hike." And he said, "Okay, that's cool." We met up in late October, early November of this last year, and I took him into my area. These are just some of the photographs that was taken. Right there, a picture of me telling you a couple about the night that happened, because there's a key photograph that came from this thing. It was really the highlight of our night, and I'll tell you the story behind that. And then I donated some of the photographs that was in my records to them for his presentation. Before I get into that, there's a type of a trick that we do. Some of us do, some of us don't, and it's called gifting. I picked this trick up from Miss Jen Cruz and Greg Yost. Jen Cruz brought it up in the Q&A last year about leaving tobacco out, and then the tobacco was missing. Well, it's not an edible item, so something had to have took it, but what exactly? Well, I did a little bit of research, and the Native Americans, when they would go and into the woods, they would go and they leave a peace offering to the Great Spirit and the spirits of the woods. Alex Bob, he goes and he leaves tobacco in the woods. Sometimes Daniel leaves it, I leave it. The grandfather tree is what Daniel's gifting stump is to him. It's my place. It's the sacred place that I go and leave gifts for the Bigfoot. And it's really resulted in some good stuff. I'll leave anywhere from water to chewing tobacco. I chew Red Man tobacco. I'll leave that right there in the fork of the tree. I'll leave fruit like bananas, apples, oranges, plums, peaches. Or I'll leave vegetables. And usually it works out. The last two times that I've took people into my area, Adam Holbrook, Professor Darby Orko, North Carolina State University, we've had something happen in that area. So there is a little bit of result in gifting. Not all the time, but sometimes. Another possible photo of Bigfoot taken by Adam Holbrook in November of 2018 for the Small Town Illinois documentary. This photo was taken in the same area on the same hillside as the previous photo that was taken in 2017. The story behind this photograph, I'll show you the cleared up version in a moment. We were walking along this trail, and there's this tree right here that I call the natural tree stand. What it is a hickory tree, and it grows straight up, and it forks at the top, but the forks wrap around like this, and it makes like a little stool and a footrest. And I was explaining to him, you know, how like a big cat would go and leap out of a tree on his prey, a Sasquatch could possibly do that. And he says, okay, I want to get a picture of this. So go ahead and move your light around on your headlamp so that way my lens can focus. And he had a Nikon camera. So I'm standing there like this, and me being too stupid to take my hat off, I'm going like this with my head trying to get his lens to focus. Well, the whole time, I'm seeing something out of the corner of my eye. And I'm looking over like this, and I'm seeing two sets of eyes looking straight at us. And he goes, bring your light back over here. My lens won't focus. I says, forget that. Look over here. I said, Adam, are you seeing what I'm seeing? He goes, I think so. I said, start taking pictures. Go. Boom, boom, boom. And he rattled off about 10, 12 photographs. And then this right here is the one that was the highlight of our night. He had gone and zoomed it in and cleared it up a little bit, took a little bit of pixelation out. What you're looking at is the eye shine of what we saw that night. That night, I don't know if you saw it in the previous photograph, I was packing a shotgun that night because, you know, we've got copperheads out there, we've got rattlesnakes, we've got mountain lions, bobcats, we've got coyotes, wolves, and just recently they reared this black bear to the southern tips of southern Illinois. So the landowner says, you know, you're taking people out here, they're your responsibility, so I'm going to take a gun, you know, to add a little bit of extra protection, because, you know, I just feel a little bit more safer after some of my past experiences. He takes a picture of this thing looking straight at us. And while he's sitting here going like this with his camera, he's saying, I think we got him. I said, you're kidding me. He goes, no, look. He showed me that, and he zoomed it in on this same photograph. Well, while he's sitting there and he's studying that image, I'm still watching this thing. And I see it sitting there with its back up against the tree, sitting on its rump with its legs pulled into it, inside, like it's cross-legged, like a gorilla would. And he's just sitting there watching us. And then I see it get up and it starts walking at us like an ape would, a gorilla would. And it's baring its teeth at us. And I'm sitting there watching this thing. This thing, when we took it, it was about 20, 30 feet away. When we started moving towards us and I started to take action, it was about 15, 20 feet away. And I told him, I said, I would cover my ears if I was you. I shelled the gun. The two of those in front of us took off. And then what we didn't know, there was two of them that was down here to our right down the hill that took off with them. He's freaking out. I'm trying to keep him chilled out and everything. And I said, you know, chill out. Just relax. We're going to get out of here okay. And I was really on high alert when that happened. We got back to the truck. He sent me this. And it's got me a lot of scrutiny and everything. But I put it out there, you know, as my way of hopefully going to prove, you know, that there is something hanging around in southern Illinois that goes by the name of Sasquatch. Some of the gear that I've carried in the field in the past, the Manus 500 that I got from Gander Mountain in Paducah, Kentucky, it's got about 50 different pre-recorded animal calls on it. You can go and call blast anywhere from birds to deer to elk, moose, bear, wolf, coyote, animals in distress. It works fairly well, and it's given me some, what I believe, audio evidence in the past. My homemade night camera is just a $20 camera from Walmart with a $1 flashlight. It looks primitive, but it worked until I was able to get my night vision camera. The original video camera that I used, I just got for $20, 4-5 zoom. It works pretty darn well. I still use it to this day. Digital recorder, you'll find it there on my table. One of the most important pieces you should have in your gear pack when you're in the woods, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to possibly catch a Bigfoot on audio before you actually go and possibly see it. Flashlight and lanterns, both atomic beam, you can get them at Walmart for $30 for the whole bundle. Also, I didn't include, I started using oil lamps and tiki torches to go and... because when our ancestors that were having encounters with these things long before we were here, they didn't have flashlights, they didn't have electricity. They were using torches, campfires, and coal oil lamps. I also believe, you know, that these things being primarily nocturnal, that they would have night vision like we would at high noon. I believe that the high beams from a headlamp would interfere with the night vision. If anybody looked through night vision and someone's flashed the light in front of that lens, it's going to blind you. So I started resorting back to torches and a coal oil lamp. And then my homemade parabolic that I retired this year, I just made it out of a $10 microphone, a funnel, and a piece of PVC pipe, and it works just as good as mine that's sitting on my table back there does now. So really, saving money, usually what you can get, usually what you got around the house. You just got to be a little bit creative. Top 10 rules to being a good researcher, as told by Ed Brown. Plug him a little bit if you ain't checked him out. Check him out, Big Truth, on YouTube. Real nice guy. Rule 10, when in the woods, always have a recorder and always have it running. Our Night Stalkers, Mike Miller and Mike Feltner, they're more famous for their audio evidence of Bigfoot in Ohio. Like whenever we went out in the woods last night until we got back in the truck, I had that audio recorder running the entire time. Once you get out of your car or your ATV and your feet are on the ground, that recorder needs to be on. Because there's been plenty of people I've talked to that said, I had audio equipment and I heard a Bigfoot. Was it on? No. Well, crap. Probably lost out on that. So that's why I say always have it running. It's one of the most important tools that a researcher can have in their gear bag. Rule number 9, always treat another researcher with respect. Just because something they say is far-fetched to you doesn't mean it couldn't be true. Yes, there is several other outlooks on how people see Bigfoot. You've got the people that are woo, the people that's got the paranormal side. And especially, I say everybody, keep an open mind. But, you know, there's just some of them, you know, that go and debunk themselves. That's the only exception, really, to this rule, the people that can debunk themselves. That's just the ones I take an exception to. But especially, I mean, I've had my own share of bad luck with some researchers, some that are here today, and some of them I still have yet to meet. But we've got over it. We've been along our way. Some of us are still friends. But you always treat another researcher with respect. Rule number 8, do your research before conducting an investigation of your own. Learn the wildlife, terrain, compile reports made, and establish a grid area in which to investigate. Learn the wildlife. Forget about Bigfoot. Don't go in there straight looking for Bigfoot. Learn what's in there. Learn what's in the woods that you're going into. Out here, there's coyotes, bears, mountain lions, there's wolves, there's copperheads, rattlesnakes. I'm pretty sure there's moccasins out here. Those things will kill you if you go in a corner room, or if you get the chance, they will kill you. So always learn the wildlife, especially what you can and can't eat out in the wild whenever it comes to like berries. You don't want to end up chewing on poison oak and ivy. Learn the terrain out here. Mountains, Blue Ridge, right here in the Shenandoah Valley, the Appalachian Mountains, out where I'm from, we've got the Lama Mountain Range, we've got old coal mine country out there where I live. Learn where the mines are, especially like I've done in Southern Illinois. I learned where all the old coal mines was. I've got maps of the old mine shafts and where the old air shafts was. You don't want to fall down in an air shaft, and if the groundwater really took off and filled up the mine, you're going to drown. That'll break a leg, one. Compile reports made, always, like whenever I go and I do a field investigation in a certain area, I really start digging into any kind of reports from like neighbors around that area within about a mile radius around ground zero of where I'm going to be. I really want to establish my gray area. Whenever I say establish a gray area, I do it just like cops will. Whenever police are hunting for a perp, they're going to go where people have actually seen the perp. Like, I saw him down there at Harbor Freight. I seen him over here at the Fish and Pig. Down here at the Augusta Expo. I saw him down here at Cracker Barrel. They're going to focus inside that area of where the perp has been seen. The same way with the Bigfoot that I do. This is my method of doing this. I don't go out there in the woods, some random woods off the side of them and say, here he is, that's where I'm going to go. Rule number 7, don't be afraid to think outside the box. If you think that a certain experiment would be a good one to try, do it. You never know what the outcome might be. The outcome with the apple experiment, that was just out of the box off the top of my head. I tried it and seemed to have got some results from it. It wasn't the ones I was wanting, but it gave me both problems that one was in the area. I've left children's toys in the woods. I've left little choo-choo trains that played music. I've hung CDs on fishing line in the trees and made them rotate in the wind, and then the reflection really start taking off from the sunlight. That reflection off those CDs will attract any kind of animal, like any kind of feline animal. Of course, it's going to attract any kind of curious animal. You know, just like shiny objects, like deer, dogs especially. You've seen cats and dogs. That's just laser pointer on the floor. Same thing with these. Rule number 6, safety first. Always let a group of people know where you're going to be. If you're going to be without phone service, have first aid, etc. You don't want your family finding you on the next episode of Missing 411. I broke this rule yesterday and Michael Cook chewed me out over it. Of course, I know I screwed up. But always let a group of people know where you're going. Whenever I go in my research area, I always let at least 6 people know where I'm going to be. My mom, my grandparents, my brother, my dad, and my best friend, Connor. I let them know where I'm going to be. I'm going to say, you know, I'm going in. I'm going into Happy Hollow. And I'm going to be there for about 4 or 5 hours. If you don't hear from me by at least the 6th hour, call help because something has happened. There's been people that's gone out there in the woods, never seen again. That's why I'm saying always let people know where you're going to be, especially if you're going to be without phone service. Have first aid. I've made that mistake before. Almost lost this finger. Almost cut it clean off. End up being rushed to the hospital, about 30 stitches. So that's why I always say have first aid. I've seen people go out there and they've busted their leg, dislocated a kneecap, done something or other. You always have your first aid with you. Rule number 5, carry a pen and pencil and paper with you at all times. Documentation is key in field research. Document weather, season, time, description, what you were doing when you found the evidence, also leading up to whenever you had the encounter or found evidence, and afterwards. Say I saw a Bigfoot on coal on the first trail off the coal road at 4:58 p.m. in the fall, right before a freak snowstorm. That's special details. You never know. Another person might have an encounter with a Bigfoot at those same same special details. Especially my colleague and my good friend Baltimore Galvan Jr. He goes and he really documents like every kind of like the wildlife changes when certain animals come in and migrate. Whenever the robins come in, the weather changes, whenever the crops are finally getting planted and they're harvested, when they start blooming, all that kind of good stuff. Always document a whole lot of things. You may be surprised how good that could be in the future for helping yourself. Rule number 5, be critical of evidence that you find. Rule out nature, wildlife, and human involvement when you are preparing to present evidence to the public, and be prepared for ridicule if and when it comes. Yes, it is coming. I've had plenty of it, and trust me, it doesn't get any prettier than last time. rule out the nature. You know, bears out here, they'll climb up trees, and they'll get to the top of those trees. They'll either break them out, or they'll bend those trees over, or break them off halfway up just because of the sheer weight of the bear. Especially with the nature, be sure to rule out, because there's a lot of tree structures I've seen that's come out of this area. Be sure to rule out, you know, any kind of like wind damage, any kind of weather damage that could have been done to it by freak ice storm, snowstorm, windstorm, tornado, even flooding, washing out the roofs and make that tree land a certain way. The wildlife with the bears, any kind of like animals that will climb a tree, like a bear or a cat, and human involvement with a lot of the stuff that I've shown you guys with the arches and the structures. Be sure to check for any kind of like choker marks, any kind of saw marks, hack marks from a saw, a handsaw, or a chainsaw, or an axe. And also look for any kind of scarring from any kind of machinery that could have been tampering around with the tree, especially. Rule number three, make sure that your gear is prepped and up to date when preparing for a prolonged investigation in the field. Have plenty of batteries, plenty of gasoline for vehicles, and plenty of food rations to sustain you and those with you. Gear up to date. Perfect example, the girls in the corner over there, they've gone out and their gear has gone dead, batteries have gone out. I myself have been out in the woods late at night, my headlamp gone out after I've gone and I've changed the batteries out, but didn't bring an extra set with me, and I've had to hoof it out in the dark. Also, Daniel can attest to this, extra SD cards. Those SD cards will fill up pretty quick, especially if you're doing a lot of filming out there in the woods and taking pictures. Have plenty of gasoline for vehicles. Also, make sure that you got at least an extra battery charged with you to swap out in case your battery goes dead. In my area in Southern Illinois, I have been out in the woods and my side has run out of gas or the battery's died. And I've had to have people come in there and pick me up, or I've had to hoof it out in the snow or in the rain and heat, which is nobody's friend. And plenty of food rations to sustain you and those with you. Always, food is going to be pretty good, because people run out of food, they start getting cranky, start really getting grouchy with each other, and then they try to start eating each other pretty much. Rule number two, stay warm in the cold months and hydrated in the hot months. Be mindful of your surroundings, have a set game plan and backup plans in case error should happen. I've made this mistake in the cold months when I first camped out. They said it was going to be warm in the first week of November, and it was going to turn off cold next week. Well, Mother Nature had all their plans. I went out there in a light sleeping bag and about froze to death. And especially hydrated in the hot months. You know, it gets hot out here. Especially the heat index, especially Southern Illinois, we get up to 110, 115 heat index daily in the summertime. Always stay hydrated. Be mindful of your surroundings. I had a friend of mine, a fellow researcher, that passed away here about a year ago. He was in the same research area that I frequent at Ferncliff, and he was there with his family, and he fell and died from his injuries. Always be mindful of your surroundings. And have a set game plan and backup plans in case error should happen. So I'm out there with Daniel and he busts his leg. It got to be possibly where they could come in there and airlift him out. And if not, have a way of actually dragging him out there on some kind of a skid after splitting his leg, so that we could actually put him in an ambulance, take him to a hospital. And that is what I mean by my game plan and backup plans. And rule number one, when turning in a report or telling about your encounter or encounters, go to someone you can trust or a well-local trusted organization. That's local. Every little piece of possible evidence in every encounter is instrumental in the quest to prove that Bigfoot exists. Especially whenever I tell people in Southern Illinois, if it's paranormal, go to the Little Egypt Ghost Society. If it's cryptid-related, come to Southern Illinois Monster Hunters. If it's in Kentucky, go to Michael Cook with Cook Cryptid Research. Carolina Squatch Watchers, Minnesota, the She Squatchers, or here in the Shenandoah Valley, go to Danny Benoit. Those are the people you guys want to go to. You always go local. And especially when it comes to the town, and make sure they're well-trusted people in the organization that's actually going to take you serious. I don't discriminate whether I get handed or before I investigate just about anything and everything except the paranormal anymore. If you'd like to contact the Southern Illinois Monster Hunters, find us on Facebook at Southern Illinois Monster Hunters in the search engine. Find us on YouTube at Southern Illinois Monster Hunters, SIMH. Or you can email us at blimp, SIMH, at gmail.com. If you have any, if you want to email me, it comes straight here, and I will read your email, and I will get back to you as soon as possible. It may take anywhere from 15 minutes to a couple hours. I will get back to you, I swear. Also, back there at my table, I've got my gear set up. You guys are more welcome to come back there and look. I've got, we got t-shirts back there from small to XXL with our SIMH thing go bump in the night. We got our business cards back there. If you want to take those as a little memento of the day, you're more welcome to. We got, if you want to turn in a report to us, we got our forms back there with ink pens. Take them, fill them out, bring them back to the table. We'll read every single one of them, and we will get back to you. We appreciate just about every report we get in. Again, everybody, thank you guys for coming out. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Again, that was Zach's panel from ECBRO's second annual Bigfoot convention / conference. I hope all of you enjoyed that panel. If you have any questions, comments on it, please send it to us here at the show at longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or leave a comment on our pin post on Facebook, which is our Facebook page is facebook.com/thelongcoatmafiapodcast. Or you can send us a direct message on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is longcoatmafia. And but if you want to follow any of our, when we go to events or do interviews or so forth and so on, you can send us a direct message and follow us on Instagram by going to, as well, Long Coat Mafia. But while you're on Facebook, leaving your comment or leaving us a direct message on Twitter, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. We do if you're listening to us on YouTube, please leave a comment down below. We'll be more than happy to read your comments. But again, our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. We do read emails on the air. Again, special thanks to Zach. Can't thank him and Daniel Benoit enough for letting us cover this event and getting panels. Zach wasn't the only person that let us get panels, so stay tuned. Stay tuned to this podcast to get the other panels. We have several coming up. Next up would be the next panel to be released that we have is the North Carolina Squatch Watchers. That will be coming up, but I believe we have other things in the pipeline that have to be released due to either events that they want to help promote or other things in the pipeline that we might be somewhat contractually obligated to kind of cover. But if things, depending on how things fall, the next panel that we will be releasing will be the North Carolina Squatch Watchers. So stay tuned to Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. The reason why I'm kind of including our main website in everything is because, one, even though I don't know if you're able to get our podcast through Google Play on your desktop or laptop, I'm just including it there. But if you're on mobile, you can always get us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, the Podbean app. I personally recommend the Podbean app, but if you're on YouTube or you want to listen to us on YouTube, you're more than welcome to do so. You just have to search for us on YouTube. Just search for the Long Coat Mafia podcast. We do come up. We do have a Mixer.com channel. It is mixer.com/LCMP. All those letters are in capitalized, or I should say are capitalized. We do have a Twitch channel. It is twitch.tv/longcoatmafiapod. And that's pretty much about it. So I do recommend you checking us out on our main website, which is, again, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, because you're able to check, like, all our panels going all the way back to the beginning, like our Paracon panels that we did in the past. Even though the audio sounds like in this past panel that we got from Zach, again, Zach, thank you very much. Sounds way like we put our microphone right next to a speaker. We didn't do that, but the panels that we got at this event are way better audio quality. Even though there were some audio problems, were way better audio quality than the Paracon panel. So we are learning. We will continue to learn, and hopefully next year, if we're invited back to the ECBRO's third annual Bigfoot convention / conference, we will be better, more prepared, and know what to do. Again, thank you, Zach. Thank you, Daniel. Stay tuned for the next panel to be released and other further episodes that we have in the pipeline. I think all of you, whether you're Bigfoot hunters or not, you'll get enjoyment out of the panels that we will be providing for you and the other episodes that we have out there for you, whether upcoming episodes or episodes that we have in our archive. So please stay tuned, stick with us, check our archives, because there's a lot we have out there for all of you. Please, please check us out. If you're listening to us on YouTube, leave us a like, comment, and everything else. If you're listening, if you got this through, found this show through YouTube, share it. If you found this link through iTunes, or I should say Twitter or Facebook, please share the link. That way we could beat the odds. Share the post. That way we could beat the algorithms and everything else and get way out there for everybody. So for those of you that do, thank you. Especially since we will be approaching our fourth anniversary that's rapidly coming up. So again, for those of you who have been listening since the beginning, thank you so much. Thank all of you for listening. There's more to come. I'm starting to get excited again. So thank you all. Thank you very, very much. Let's do this. Let's try to make it as far as we can with this great show of ours. So thank you. Have a great evening. Have a great week. And I'll see all of you next week.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.